Hi, this is Joseph Geierman. You're listening to the Georgia Politics Podcast, and we're here at Manuel's Tavern talking about Georgia politics. We're going to start off with the panelists introducing themselves, and we'll start to my right.
Thank you, Joseph. This is Grayson with Mostly Media.
Catherine from Blog for Democracy.
James from Drifting Through the Grift.
And this is Larry, formerly Decatur Guy. No longer Decatur Guy.
What happened?
I closed it down. I pulled an Andre.
Shut down his blog. Yeah. Pulled it down. It'll be used against you by an opponent in some future race. Yeah. All right. Well, we're done with the legislative session. Get right into things, and everyone's starting to pile up for their various places that they're gonna, you know, they're trying to get for their next elected offices. The GOP governor's race was pretty shaken up recently when Casey Cagle surprisingly backed out of it, citing health concerns. And so now we've got a whole new set of people coming in. So why don't we start with you, Grift? Who do you see as the person to look out for in the current governor's race for the GOP?
Well, on the GOP side, it's kind of the field right now. No one really knows who the front runner is. I think that Karen Handel has a bit of the inside track, which I think was reported in Southern Political Report this week, because she's got the money and she's got the team. She's basically assembling Sonny Perdue's former team. She is a kind of Republican that she's conservative. She is religious. She can go down into South Georgia and she can talk the good talk in front of the Rotary Club. But she talks in a manner that doesn't scare the hell out of the sort of moderate Republicans in the metro area, and that's her base. So I would say she is the favorite now, but if we are too far away, and with Cagle pulling out, it's just too much fruit basket turnover to really say who is really the front runner at this point.
What about Nathan Deal? Does anyone know anything about him?
The only thing I would say about Nathan Deal is he is a congressman, which you would think would be an advantage, but if you ask the average Georgian who Nathan Deal is, they don't even know he's in Congress, because he, other than talk tough on immigration every couple of years, he really hasn't done anything.
Where does he even represent?
He represents the part of the mountains that crazy-ass Paul Brown doesn't represent, pretty much. So he is North Georgia. He's sort of a line from Toccoa to Dalton.
He's probably of all the, how many congressmen do we have, 11?
13.
He's probably the least high profile of all of them.
Yeah, I mean, there was some talk of Lynn Westmoreland, and as much as we like to make fun of the fact that Lynn Westmoreland got totally pantsed on the Colbert Report, at least people know he's a congressman. I'm not sure many people know Nathan Deal's a congressman.
Well, and I honestly don't know that even if they did know he was a congressman, if that would help him or hurt him, because people are, I think, frustrated with Washington and might not want that coming back to, you know, control the state, maybe.
I will say an advantage Nathan Deal may have, he could be a dark horse. He does not have name recognition, but he is a very good campaigner, and he's a very good speaker. Now, he does tend to say crazy things every now and then, but name a politician.
Well, he is in the GOP.
Okay, well, I was going to say name a politician that doesn't say crazy things every now and then. We'll get to Thurber Baker later. But he's a very good speaker. He's a very good campaigner. So there could be something there. But, you know, we're 18 months out. There's still a lot of play in this game.
Well, you mentioned Thurber Baker, and, you know, Larry, I just wanted to maybe ask you, like, do you think that he could win the Democratic primary?
Obviously, it depends on who his competition is. If Roy Barnes is not in the race, then I would say 95% chance, yes. I don't know who else.
Do you think Roy Barnes would beat him?
I think it would be yes. I think Roy Barnes would beat him if he were to enter the race.
Roy Barnes clears the board.
Yeah. I don't think Thurbert would drop out necessarily, and I think it would be a lot closer than if he weren't running. But I would think that in a head-to-head matchup, there'll be some other candidates like the general. But I think in a head-to-head matchup, with Barnes and Baker, Barnes would win with about 58% of the vote. Because Thurbert is not going to get 100% of the white vote, or even 80% of the white vote. There's going to be a lot of African-American support behind Roy Barnes if he does run.
Do you think he alienated any people with the Gennaro Wilson case, or do you think that people will kind of forgotten about that?
No, yeah. I don't think people will forget about it. Well, I don't think people will forget about it, because I don't think people will let them. They'll be reminded of it.
If I was running an opposition against Thurbert Baker, I would hit him on it at every stump speech I could. And no, people have not forgotten about it, because I got an email during the last election cycle. I don't even remember what the race was, but someone was canvassing down in Albany, and they emailed me and asked me, do you think the Gennaro Wilson thing is still playing? And I responded, ask the preachers. When you're in South Georgia, in the African-American community, the people that have their finger on the pulse are the preachers. And I got an email back and said, it still matters.
Yeah, I think the Wilson case for Baker is about like the gay marriage thing for Kathy Cox, except even worse.
Yes.
Because it affects and impacts more people's opinion.
Yeah.
And it's just gonna implode what should be his base.
So the big question in the Democratic side of the governor's race is, will Roy Barnes run? And does anyone have a feeling one way or the other? Catherine?
I really don't. I have to say I'm pretty bored with the whole thing already.
I think if Roy does decide to run,
like James said before we started, it probably knocks DuBose out. I mean, Poitras has been very clear that he's not going to drop out no matter what.
It reminds me a lot of, and I'm going to date myself here, but it reminds me a lot of the '88 presidential campaign. When we were sitting on the sidelines waiting for Cuomo to come in. And it's a very dangerous political game, because I'm going to speak out of turn here a bit and say, I think the Democratic Party wants him to run. I think they see him as their best chance to win. But the longer he goes on with this, the story becomes, will he or won't he, not will he be a good governor. And once the story becomes that, and that starts to become a detriment.
Well, it reminds me of the Jim Martin thing when he ran.
Yeah.
You know, is he going to run? Is he not going to run? And you know, I think that people, if they decide that they're going to run, it's a big commitment. And when they vacillate like that, it just makes me think that
they don't really want it,
or they're just waiting for. It's like an ego thing, and they just want enough people to come and kiss the ring and sort of force their hand.
Which is what happened to Cuomo in '88. I mean, once again, going way back in history here, it became a whole thing of, come to New York, ask me to run, and it started to be portrayed as an ego thing instead of being a servant to the people or even to your party. And once you sort of top that hill of it becomes about a personal thing, then people start to get turned off.
I agree with you. And I think we're
probably reaching that point.
We're nearly at that point now. But I think if
Barnes does not run, and it's even with the whole Wilson issue, if it's just DuBose, the general, and Baker wins pretty easily.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, let's change tracks a little bit. Just because I think there have been some interesting things that have happened recently in terms of politicians getting themselves in trouble through social media. First thing was actually a couple of months ago. Guy who's the mayor of Dallas, Georgia, Boyd Austin, he had, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but
Quart of malt liquor and a pack of Newports?
Yeah, in reference to what Obama might have given to the British Prime Minister, it's a gift. And when he was confronted about it, he said, well, I've got people who control my Facebook. So,
who was this?
The mayor of Dallas. Okay. Actually, I think it was a quart of the bull.
I think you're right. A quart of the bull.
Here's a real simple rule. If you don't understand in this day and age that you don't allow other people to access your social media sites, you don't need to be mayor.
Well, this is going to be a great election cycle because none of these clowns are able to even turn on a computer. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
Well,
you cannot just blame it on the tech guy. Blame it on IT.
It just seems like there's a huge learning curve right now, and all these, you know, maybe older guys who haven't been immersed in this stuff are starting to find themselves a little more tripped up than, you know, and the same kind of stuff that everyone's pointing to people, you know, their indiscretion when they're 20, drinking a beer on getting a picture taken of them and getting that put online. But, you know, it's happening more and more with just like Eric Erickson, the guy who's the city councilman in Macon, also a pundit. A local pundit.
And a national pundit.
National pundit. Sent a Twitter message about David Souter, and I don't remember the exact thing. It had something to do with having sex with horses and children or something.
How crude can I be?
You can be as crude as you want.
He called him a goat-fucking child molester.
Okay.
There you go.
And somebody...
That's so conservative. But, you know, that sort of behavior.
But it's the screen capture. We're living in the era of a screen capture. You can't take it back. What you've written or said out there, somebody has captured your text, whatever.
Do you think he wants to take it back, really?
No. It gives him free press.
Yeah, he's getting it right now.
I mean, Ann Coulter has made a living off of this very same thing.
A good living.
A nice living. And so, you know.
Can you be a politician and make this
that,
kind of living?
It'll hurt him politically, but I'm at this point.
In Macon?
I don't.
So you're saying they're a bunch of fuckers
without,
down
there.
No,
without
I'm
knowing,
not saying that.
Do they even know, in other words?
Well, do they know? And does I mean,
his opponent will let them know, I'm sure.
But won't they just say, oh, you know, that Twitter, we don't understand what that is.
Because I think the press came to the city council meeting after that.
Really?
And then they,
because
there was another issue having to do with making the president an honorary city. Right. I'm not sure why Macon is you know, screwing around with these issues right now.
They have more per capita crazy than the rest of Georgia.
It's like durable
which is really
times
saying
15.
Something.
You know, it comes back to the viralness of the viraliness of this. It's astonishing. I mean, I Twittered a picture of that Georgia gang dude on his chrome Harley Davidson the other day. My God, you know, it was just it really perked a lot of people who ordinarily would not have been associated with social media. They're all on Facebook now because it's like, whoa, what is this thing that sends out pictures of people in media on motorcycles looking really cool?
Jeff Dickerson was a big fan
after
you did that.
Jeff Dickerson looks like a big geek.
Dickson, right?
But I made him look like not so much a geek. So, but then that becomes a topic of conversation in a matter of hours. So it's... if they don't know viral now, they will at some point.
We saw this
a
couple of years ago, and we're sort of predating what's going on now. But a couple of years ago, when the blogs were just getting really big, some of the politicians on Peach Pundit or whatever would make comments, and it would get blown. You know, they would say something really stupid, and it would get spread around, and other people would link to that, and blah blah blah.
But now it's seeping out of Georgia.
Now it's even further.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the person who captured those comments on Twitter that Eric made about Judge Souter, he wasn't even from Georgia, was he?
No, it was John Amato from Crooks and Liars.
Okay, yeah, so there you go. It's bleeding over. And
well, but also you have to understand that at a certain level, not a high level, but maybe a level way down here, Eric is a national figure.
Yeah, I mean, if I said it, it would have never been out anywhere. No, but Eric Erickson said it. He you know.
He's the head of Red State.
Yeah.
Let's move on from Eric. Oh.
Well, yeah, I think that honestly, the more interesting question to me is being a politician and can you be a politician in the age of social media the way that we've seen them before? Because we're just going to see more and more of this stuff happening, and they're going to get smarter at some point, but everyone slips up at some point, and this is going to become a bigger issue. And I think that's the interesting part about this, you know, beyond Eric Erickson as a personality, more just how this affects the issue. So, but moving on, Another interesting thing, and this is a little bit separate from politics, except in the fact that a lot of people still get their news through it, and their news about politics is the AJC and the recent redesign and their recent layoffs and everything that's gone on. And Grayson, why don't I start with you first and find out what you think of the recent moves at the AJC and their new editor?
In a way, I don't really feel like I'm the person to comment on this because I don't come from a print background. So I don't have that emotional attachment to print as a professional person. I come from a broadcast background. And so to me, it's very simple to jettison print. However, it's a horrible, horrible thing to sit back and watch a Southern institution just make a suicide nosedive into the ground. And I'm completely convinced it doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the reporting or the people who work at the AJC. It is simply a clueless leadership in every possible way. They never saw the tsunami of the internet coming. They were not prepared. It's sort of a disaster relief scenario. They were simply, it's like a Katrina. They were caught unprepared.
How can you have been caught unprepared, though? Because this has been coming for the past 30
bad
years.
Bad leadership prevents you from...
I'm going to disagree with that just a little bit. It's not they didn't see the tsunami coming. They saw the tsunami when it was 100 miles out at the ocean, and they kept barbecuing on the beach. They knew this was coming. And they did nothing about it.
Give them a little credit. I was trying to give them a bit of... But the thing is, it comes down to news cannot be bureaucratized in the way it used to be. News has gone beyond the institution. It's gone. It's out of the asylum now. It is no longer something that can be managed in the way it used to be managed by these huge media plantations, whether it's the AJC or Cox Entity. News now simply belongs in the hands of the people. And
the question, though, is there's got to be some professional people reporting the news that make money doing that. And that's really where do we go now?
Well, journalism does not abhor a vacuum. It will not abhor a vacuum. Put it that way.
Things will evolve.
People will profit, and they will, I don't know necessarily they're going to profit in the way they used to.
Yeah.
But journalism is going to get out there.
But it might take the AJC either dying or completely transforming into something different.
I think
before that money gets there.
I've thought about this a lot, and I've always read newspapers. I haven't read the AJC in a long time because
it sucks.
Because it sucks. Here's the thing.
Yeah. I didn't say that. That was Larry.
I'll say it.
Larry said
that. I'll say. We talked about this before we started reporting. I would subscribe to the AJC. I would pay for it online, even, if it had news that was hyper-local. News that I can't get anywhere else. By the time the AJC's got a national story, even a regional story, I've already read about it or heard about it on NPR or on, ABC News or online somewhere else. But the example I've been using a lot lately is I drive by an intersection every day that has been in turmoil for 6 weeks at the corner of Hollowell and Marietta Boulevard, Marietta Street, where they're redoing the railroad bridge. And we drove by there for weeks, and we couldn't figure out what the hell they were doing. I'm like, if the AJC would tell me what's going on there, I'd pay for it. I'd pay, 59 cents to read the story or, like iTunes, or I'd, subscribe monthly, or I'd pay for, whatever. I would be willing to pay for that. But they don't offer me that. They fired all their local reporters and then they moved their, say what you will about Cynthia Tucker. I kind of liked her. Now she's in D.C. So how does that help me locally? So if they're trying to be a national paper, they're going to lose. Because none of the national papers are making it either.
I sure hope that's not what they're trying to do.
Well, it's obvious that that's what they're trying. Isn't it? Isn't that what it seems like to you?
I don't know. But I'll say the positive spin out of this is there are a couple of hundred journalists in this town that are suddenly out of a job.
And they're writing.
And those people... These are people who love to write for a living, and they're going to figure out a way to make this work. And so maybe that's the good thing. Maybe this had to happen. And it's going to be painful, and it's going to be terrible for some people, but something's going to come out of this, and we got too much talent in this town and too much news for it not to get covered.
I think the AJC, though, needs to die in its existing form in order for other people to actually make money doing journalism, because the print advertising dollars are still being spent there, and that's money that would have been, that will be at some point when it fully evolves, spent on other media.
And that's a good question. And the writers and the journalists, and there's so many good ones now on this street, but they have to at some point put on the bean counter hat, or they have to put on the business model cap, for lack of a better word, and they have to come together and start thinking about how can they capture those dollars that are going away.
And I don't know the answer to this question, but are good writers, newspaper writers, are they good businessmen?
No. They're the worst.
Yeah, they're kind of like artists.
You know? Exactly.
I've talked to a lot of them over the past couple months, and they'll be the first to tell you.
Yeah.
They have no clue how the business side work, but they're learning fast.
And
in a lot of ways, they're a lot like the people sitting around this table several years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of thrown in the deep end and you learn to swim, and there's a lot of them that have been doing the same thing for the past 20 or 30 years, and they're in the deep end and they're treading water as fast as they can.
I'm sorry, Larry, go ahead.
All I know is that I don't know what the answer will be, but there will be an answer, and people are still going to need news, they're still going to want news, and there's going to be, as long as that need is there, there's going to be somebody there to fill it, and they're going to somehow make money off of it.
Absolutely.
I don't know how that's going to work, but it's going to work.
We just don't know what shape it's going to take yet.
Yeah, and anybody tries to tell you they've got the answer,
you know,
run. Do not walk away from that person right now. Eventually somebody's going to come and have some definitive answers, but right now it's all up in the air. However, I did see this brilliant quote today on Twitter, of course. It was a guy said, How do you get an old geezer, I'm paraphrasing here, but how do you get an old geezer interested in Web 2.0 and connectivity? You lay him off.
Were you going to say, Catherine?
Well, this is happening all over the country.
They'll learn because they have to.
It's not just Atlanta. There are other papers that have completely folded.
Yeah, and there's my hometown paper in Ann Arbor, Michigan, went completely online, just like the Seattle paper, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Post-Intelligencer.
Pardon?
The PI, the post.
Yeah. So I think in some ways, I think that might have been a really good, I mean, it certainly probably would have made sense in Seattle because it's a very internet savvy town. And that might have been a good option for the AJC too. Because, the paper's got to cost a fortune.
Yep.
And that's part of the reason that we stopped getting the paper, because every week we'd end up with a pile. I mean, I felt like I felt awful about it, because I'd have 10 pounds of paper that I read, three pages of.
Well, other than a few improvements and some doodads, you got to realize they're still using technology that was invented in 1400.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to a bank today, even if this was good economic times, and you say, oh, I want to start up a business and I want to spend $2 million on this gigantic machine that I have to put in this building that's going to spit out a bunch of stuff that people don't want. Find me a banker that's going to give you that loan.
Well, fortunately, they're owned by the Cox.
Well, yeah. Well, if you
family
say
family trust.
Well, no. If you say I've also got this business over here where I sell used cars on the cheap online, and that's gonna, I'll put that up for collateral. Yeah, okay.
Well, I see the broadcasting. Well, this Cox also, of course, has a large interest in broadcasting here in this town. In fact, they've got radio broadcast. I'm glad to see them lose print, if you ask me. I think the monopoly needs to be put to bed by now in Atlanta. But I think the broadcasting end of because they seem to be, radio in particular, seems to be making a transition to digital environments very well, meshing it up, in other words. They're not necessarily trying to dupe themselves over to an online environment, but I think the broadcasting environments are going to win in this, and they'll probably come out just as strong, and they'll just sink more money into, say,
yeah,
WSB,
as long as you don't need
radio,
as long as you don't need a physical paper, piece
right?
Of
they've
sheet
never
of paper.
Needed that paper
well,
to begin with,
it can be
so
any,
they have the
any
advantage.
Sort of media that
they've got their own issues too, though,
sure.
Because they've got to deal with DVRs and.
Yeah,
BitTorrent and all kinds of different technologies which let people bypass ads, and advertisers are questioning
TVs.
The value
but
that they get.
But it comes back to politics. Yeah. But let's bring this all back to politics, because that's why we're all here. Where, for instance, are all the hundreds of thousands of advertising buys for these politicians going to end up in, say, a year?
It's going to be on TV. Now, 10 years from now, I'm not sure, but right now it's TV.
And radio.
But, for instance, let's take the Handle campaign. What do you think she's going to do in terms of purchasing advertising?
A crap load of airtime on Channel 2.
There you go. Cox wins again. I would, the you Cox know, Plantation's maybe, got it wrapped up.
Maybe I just have a different philosophy, but I see the television ads as just waste. I mean, it for a political campaign. I mean, I just...
Well, it's not very targeted, is it?
Yeah, how old are you, Larry? This is 32. Such a generational thing, yeah.
Well, until we see a campaign that comes along and breaks the model, you may be 100% correct, Larry. But until we have a candidate that actually comes along and says, this is bullshit and I'm going to do it differently.
You're absolutely right, because, I mean, as much as he used the social media and different types of stuff and small donors on it, Barack Obama spent a hell of a lot of money on television.
Yes, he did.
I mean, he socked all that extra money that he raised right back into
television. But he did a great job at finding the right people to give him the money to buy those TV ads.
But I think the key, though, for television advertising is doing a television ad and running the hell out of it on TV if you've got the money. But it's also, you've got to use it in the social media.
And it does come back to local, what you're saying. It all really, every road leaves back to your local community. I'm sure we've all seen on Twitter and Facebook, because we're all on there pretty heavily, what the Atlanta City Council person, Kwanzaa Hall, has been doing with social media. He's been working it like, I mean, it's insane what this guy is doing. He's out there making his own videos, circulating them. If he sends out a tweet that says, I'm going to be here, Lord knows 300 people show up within an hour.
Free pancakes in Centennial Park.
There you go. Yeah. And I bet there are a lot of people that turned out because they're just connecting with him in that way.
Probably a subject for the next podcast, but yeah, the Atlanta mayor's race, that's a good one.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about that one.
next month.
Next month, okay. What's next, Joseph?
Well, I mean, that's probably about it. We're at almost half an hour, so why don't we go around the table and have some final thoughts? And Larry, why don't we start with you?
Ooh, final thoughts. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the governor's race, how that shakes down. All of the statewide races really on the Republican side seem much more interesting because of the shifting around. You have incumbents who are trying to move up and. So there's a lot of open positions there and a lot of jockeying, and we'll see how it all turns out, including the lieutenant governor's race, to see whether he'll be able to, not really able to run for health reasons for governor, but whether someone else will stay in the race and challenge him.
Well, just going off what Larry just said, I watched Real Time with Bill Maher last night, and James Carville was on, Catherine's already grown. but he did have something where it was very interesting, kind of what you're talking about, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but they were talking about how the Republicans are basically going through a civil war now, and James Carville said something along the lines of, well, you know, we Democrats, we lose an election, we go off on a retreat somewhere and kind of hug and cry. Republicans lose an election, they just start tearing into each other, so it's a lot more fun to watch. But anyway. So, just glad to be back on the political podcast. Really enjoy it. That's about it.
Well, I think one race we didn't talk about was the AG race, and I think it's going to be interesting to see the two guys from Cobb County go after each other, Sam Owens and Rob Talay. I think that'll be really interesting. I think they're both good candidates, really.
Did you just call
my gosh.
Well,
she said something positive about it.
I think it's going to be an interesting race. I think I do think that they're both good candidates. They represent their parties well, and
I wish both of them were running for governor, quite frankly.
So do I.
You know, I wouldn't disagree with you there, but that's a race that I think will be interesting to watch. And
4 years.
I'm looking forward to the Secretary of State's race too, which is still up in the air, except for Gail Bunn.
Well, in terms of politics, it's going to be a long, hot, boring summer. But once things cool down and September kicks in, I think we're gonna have some fun in Georgia. But it won't be until September.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone out there for listening. I want to thank my panel for being here. It was a great conversation. Banyuls Tavern has been very gracious in allowing us to have this here, and Georgia Podcast Network is great for hosting it. So subscribe to our RSS feed and listen to us again next time. Thanks.